Hello and welcome to the F24 podcast. My name is David, and every week I ask creatives of all sorts to come over to my studio in North Acton to talk about their lives and interactions with London culture and creativity. I love the stories we get when we use these three points as an angle for conversation and how the three parts cross over and intertwine and end up being a massive part of who we become as London creatives. It won't always be London, but this is my hometown, so no better place to start. This is F24. I want to thank everyone who has been listening, who's reached out and given me feedback. SoundCloud allows you to see the cities and countries that have been listening in, and it's been great to see all of London boroughs tuning in. New York, LA, Wollongong in Australia, Panaji in India, people in New Zealand, Nepal, Spain, Bulgaria, Cyprus, Hong Kong, South Africa. It's been amazing to see, so thank you and big up all of you. Let's get some more stories down. This week's interview is with musician and producer Simon Franks from London's very own Audio Bullies. I met Simon in 2009 whilst painting in East London, but I'd known about him for years, having been a fan of his music since the early 2000s. It was a real pleasure to have him round, and it was a great catch-up. Go and check him out at Audio Bullies on Instagram whilst you're listening. Enjoy.
And he's like, yeah, do you know how people make these tunes? Like, they put all these beats in a box and the box just juggles them round. And I just remember thinking, you know, I was probably like 13, like, the fuck? So basically some mad box just makes all these beats we're listening to.
Chapter 1, London. We head off to southwest London and Simon fills us in on life in the area, his early school years and how his eyes were opened to culture at a young age. We chat about local heroes and friends from the area, meeting Plot and Funk, and we reminisce about Grundy, the Hall of Fame, and we chat about how the city was marked out in the graffiti world in the 90s.
Wicked, Simon. Thanks for coming round.
Really yes, good Daz. Good time, while, man. Yeah, it's been a minute, mate.
It's been a minute. Yeah, it has. Shoreditch, wasn't it?
It must be about 8 years.
Yeah, it must be.
Jesus, a lot's happened in that time. Yeah.
All right, well, look.
Yeah, it was 2009 I was living in that flat. Where
yes, we were, and that's when I had the gallery. Yeah, that's it. Yeah. And I think I might have shut by the time we met properly.
Yeah, I left in the end of 2009.
So. Yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, and then I was moving off. Then I moved out of Shoreditch, I think.
We both vacated N1.
The fun times.
You were M1 as well,
Yeah. A couple of flats down there.
Yeah, good times, man.
That was wicked. And obviously the start of Crème and Black, which was lovely.
Yeah, when it was up opposite Brick Lane.
Exactly, that was just with the wall across the road. And
yeah, I remember being there 1 week and Yanni was like, have you got a job site? I was like, yeah, well, kind of. Like that kid hanging about.
What do you do, mate?
Pissing Yanni and Darren off. But yeah, no, it was cool there. And, you know, I was up there the other day on the Bethnal Green one as well. I saw them up there. I've always passed by them.
Yeah, I love that shop. That new one's fucking perfect.
Classic. Well, the thing is, what I always said with that is that they, where you had other graph shops, they were just bare.
Yeah.
And those guys made it into like a museum and some. They brought the art and all the old cans of Krylon and Rust Knot and whatever.
They themed that place up properly.
Yeah, they made it a bit of a museum and a place that you want to spend time in.
Yeah.
And that was the key to their success, I think.
Yeah. No, they fucking tuned in.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're dons. Well, let's start at the beginning, man. So, where are you born? Where are you from?
Richmond is where I grew up.
Wicked, West London.
Yeah, Queen's Road. And I was born in Kingston Hospital.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, a bit further.
Yeah, just over the park. Went to Grey Court School down in Ham, which is a little place in between Richmond and Kingston.
I've only been to Ham once. I came across it by mistake.
Yeah, it's just like if you go out past Richmond along the Thames, It's the next town.
Is it?
Quite tucked away.
What was that, primary or secondary?
No, primary was Vineyard in Richmond, and secondary was Grey Court.
Cool.
And that's where I met Plot and Vega and all of the people from Jesus.
So let's go back to Richmond then, like in primary school and. Like, what was that like then? So when was that, the '80s then? Early '80s.
Yeah,
I think we're the same age actually.
Yeah, I was born in 80.
Same, yeah.
Yeah, March 3rd, 80. Same day as my dad, man.
Fucking nuts.
Yeah. But no, primary school was all right. It was.
We were just saying about that, those snap tracks, because that's when they came out.
Exactly, they were the. Daz had these records out. What was it? Snap the Power.
Yeah, I picked up the Snap the Power yesterday and Snap Oops Up,
which was like the same time as Pump Up the Jam.
Amazing.
Black Box.
And that was us in our primary
Mantronics,
school.
All of that. That was early raving memories. Amazing. 10 years primary. Old at the school disco.
Yeah, isn't it?
But yeah, primary school was all right. Yeah, we played football and that at break. I was even tagging then. I had a little tag hat.
Did you?
Yeah, I remember tagging.
So what? How did you? So what happened there? So what? So primary school then obviously opened your eyes to something. Well, I say primary school because we're too young to be hanging out on the streets or whatever in the manor. So primary school.
Well, saying that, I was from about 10. Yeah. Oh, nice. Yeah. 9, 10, because the old man was not living at home. So, mum was tired.
So you got out.
And there's a few little writers from the estate, Kiki.
Is it the estate you're from?
Yeah, Queen's Road. Yeah.
I'm from an estate as well. So I was out from young as well. Yeah. But some people.
Yeah. Well, I lived in a council house. Yeah. It was an old house. And then they built the Queen's Road estate around that.
And so,
spot.
You were being out was okay.
Yeah, well, there was always loads of kids about and shit to do.
Exactly.
And there was one writer, this guy, Kiki. And he was like, and then there was another guy, Clue, as well. And they were like 15, probably 16. And I was
nine, 10.
And they took me out on a couple of missions. And they knew Don, which was, there was a guy, Clue, that lived up the road. And he had a Don piece in his bedroom.
Yeah.
And Don was
on
up,
the wall.
All up and down the district line.
Don
so we used to go in the back park and look over his garden fence. You could see this, just the tops of this Don piece. And that was, Don was like the artist in the area that was doing full colour pieces on the tracks. And that was in the days when this stuff used to stay for, it was there for 10 years and stuff,
Just rolled, didn't it? Yeah. I'm just thinking to back then. So if you were, when you were 10 and Clue and his mate would take you out, did you know that you were getting involved in that graffiti culture? Or
it was just
part of just being out?
It was just a real basic thing. I'd go down, if my dad took me up to town or whatever, we'd go to Richmond Station and there'd be tags on the jump down bit where the district line laid. There'd be the Don pieces, there was an Urban, and then writers like Devise and Tex and JB and all these people from that, and then Rosa, PFB, that started popping up later. But the earliest stuff I remember was mostly Don work. And
so so your eyes were out, you've basically been checking it since you can remember. Basically.
It's like my kids, they go, look, Dad, people have been spraying, it catches your eyes there.
You and start reading.
But there was an excitement about it, was something about it that made you think, God, this is thing that you're not allowed to do, but it looks amazing, and it's like, who did it?
I tell you what, I know exactly the feeling.
Yeah,
because I'm looking at graffiti in my part of town at that same age, and you kind of think, I don't know whether I was thinking it then, but you wonder like, this is us, like this is my people, this is the young people, and this is an adult world, because when you're out. And you're with your dad and you're going through Richmond Station.
Yeah.
That's an adult thing to do.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? But there's something there. And it's,
I don't know.
I just, there was a connection. I remember
Your parents ain't really looking at it. Like
no, and they don't, my mum was disgusted with
it. It's code. It's like a code.
Yeah, yeah. She didn't like it.
It's like, we feel this way. Like,
yeah, yeah.
This is the voice of the young, isn't it?
And although we didn't understand it, you'd look at it. You didn't understand the culture. You just knew, you started to get to understand these are names or whatever. But it's just like, yes, this is some type of voice, maybe. I don't think it's actually transient in our brains at that age.
Yeah.
But I'm sure that's exactly what it's doing.
Yeah, it's setting off a vision in your head of like an unknown world where there's some danger because people are obviously, risking stuff, getting down and doing these things. Just the style, you could see it come from New York. We were copying what they'd done there. But then later it was like, PFB were dominating. Rosa lived around the corner from us.
Okay.
He was up all over fucking London, all over the trains. You had Mean and Psych and all of them. And that was the stuff that was like getting us going. And then DDS.
Sick names, man.
What's that?
Amazing names, man. Like talking about those writers is amazing.
What, Rosa and Psych
and Mean and seeing all that shit running.
Yeah, and I've got to know a lot of them boys now, man. Yeah. We played Secret Garden Party.
Ah, yeah.
It must be a good while ago now. Yeah. A good 8 years ago or something.
And brought them along.
Rosa and all that were there for Sed, for his stag do.
Okay.
So Rosa, Shun, a few others, I think maybe Acid. There was loads of them.
Wicked.
Yeah, they were a proper fucking early sort of London graffiti gang, man.
All right, so seeing graffiti, taking note, and then being out of your mates in the evenings when, school's done and mum's tired.
Yeah.
And getting, so you understanding that culture. And then in school, you got mates who are part of, who are starting to do this, or is it still like a bit of a...
So I had a, basically I always loved it. My mum was painting at home. She started in the 80s, she started a course.
Uh-huh.
And she was doing kind of abstract style art. Right, I'll show you a picture in a minute. It looked a bit Basquiat, that kind of
thing.
Wow,
yeah.
So she was encouraging it. I've got early stuff of me doing little chalk painting copies or pastel painting copies of her style. So that almost got me ready for the edges and the 3D.
Yeah, yeah.
I actually remember the first time I learned 3D was my auntie done a graphic design course.
Yeah.
And she had all these pens and she'd shadowed these letters. I remember thinking, okay, that's how you do it. And that stayed with me. I must have been pretty young then. But my mum used to buy me all these car plans from Les Smith's.
Okay, yeah.
And we'd buy rolls of lining paper and put it in the garden. And I'd paint pieces on it, you know.
Because she was happy with you using that medium to do art, basically.
I just kind of begged to do it. She said, I don't like the spray paint. Why don't you? I said, Mum, you've got to let me use that. And so they're gone now. She might even have them in the attic, but I'd do letters. I don't think I even knew what they said half the time. Yeah. But my tag was Hatch, and I just put these like lines all together and then sort of fill it out like this. But I'd go bombing WH Smith marker in the day and all that.
Lovely, man.
But where were we? I fucking wandered off.
Just getting into graffiti and that. And so did you get into music at the same time, Link? You were talking about these school
That's what I was going to say. I was graphing at a young age, fell out of it, got into skateboarding heavily.
Right.
Got to Grey Court. Only older kids skated. No one in my year did, which kind of signified that it was almost having... It was like not going out of fashion, but you know, because it was unestablished then, it would come in waves.
Yeah. So you're talking about a year or two above you in school.
Yeah. All my pals were older, and I sort of needed to get some in my own year. And the skating thing died on me, which I was really sad about.
Right.
I remember sort of getting into graphing and with some. But basically, what happened is Funk's brother Plot left his school. ADT in Wandsworth, left that school. I don't know what happened. Some shit went. They were both there together and they were just chaos together, the two of them. So Plot got sent down. We were starting to look at graph. Plot's brother was Funk, who was an established upwriter.
Yeah.
So that's when it all started. Me and Plot started going out there, started racking paint, doing missions every Friday, doing some track
sites. So you, a bit of graph in primary school, get into that. It wasn't a culture, obviously. It was a thing to do.
Yeah, it was just a bit of tagging walls.
And then
you
go into secondary and you're like skating.
Yeah, falling out of the graph thing. It was there. But
so you skate for what? 2 years? 3 years?
I skated. I had probably a spell from like 10, 11 to about 30. So skating was my life. You know what I mean?
And if
you'd have asked me then, I'd have said, I'm going to be a pro skater.
Wicked.
Yeah.
So you took it seriously. So then, with graffiti, you're there bombing a local manor.
Yeah.
You didn't think about going all city. You're too young for that.
No.
But when you hit skating, exactly, yeah.
Yeah.
So you tag the bus route or whatever it is, you know what I mean, the local roads. But skating opens the city up in a completely different way, and especially with the age you get to.
Yeah, my old man used to take me to South Bank.
Amazing.
And by the end of it, we'd be going on our own. But we got robbed a few times.
Oh, yeah, that's part of London life.
Part of it. But it was a big, quick learning curve, all that.
Yeah, so your dad was bringing... Did he know of it? Or did you say to him?
He knew about South Bank, and I obviously...
Just being a parent and reading papers or whatever it would be.
Yeah, and I'd caught wind of it in somewhere, you know, a few weekends, I don't know how many times we've done it, but we'd go up in the day, so it was calm, not too many. People tend to skate it harder in the evening, that spot. So just flying around the banks there, doing kick turns, trying to pop tricks and stuff.
Wicked.
And then we started going back. I was excelling at it, but in a weird way, I sort of went through, because I loved mini ramp, you know.
Okay.
And I was popping airs in mini ramps and stuff, and I was pretty good. But what was happening was, as I was talking to you about earlier, that the ramp skating went out of fashion.
Right.
And it became street skating, kick flips. And I was still quite small. My pals were older.
Okay.
And they could all flip the board. And I started struggling with the kick flip, and I was getting more into graph. And I just remember this one evening, I went and met my mates. I hadn't skated for like probably a month or two.
When
you're going through a change, a transition from one thing to another, and they happen quick when you're a kid.
Yeah. And, literally over a few nights.
Yeah. And I'm like, I go down, they've all learnt kick flips and like 180 varial flips, and I'm still like stuck on like
just
ramp skating, just popping big airs, and I couldn't do it. And there's this new kid's coming to crew, and he's like, everyone's I'm not getting any cheers anymore like I had been.
Yeah.
And I remember going and crying, walking back with my best pal Nick, right. He's gone on to be an artist in New York now, who in fact gave me my tag. So fucking and then we I cried, and I think I knew it was the end of skating. It's something that I'd loved, like was a real passion, and that's when Graf took over.
That is, I'm intrigued. I think we're going to probably come back to that, because you properly fell in love with that, didn't you?
It became everything. Yeah, it became my savior, man. You know, it made me someone, didn't it?
And then, so the decision. So part of the decision for not skating was because you didn't like the new wave that was coming, or
no, I think,
or was it all happening at the same time? Was there graffiti had a bit more of an effect in your, was coming back into your life a bit more? There was like a replacement for,
it was a generational thing, you know, because no one really graffed that hard in the years above at the time.
Yeah.
It was this thing, all my, if you're hanging with older kids, you're at secondary school, because I had an older sister that introduced me when I started, so I had all like her friends. But if you're only hanging with the older kids, there's going to come a point where you need a set of solid friends in your year. And that's why I was blessed that Plot came. There was a kid, Cheek, as well, from Chiswick. Vega was in my year as well, but he weren't graffing hard at that point. And a load of other kids, man.
Yeah.
But Plot coming, I always wonder if he hadn't have picked that school, if his parents hadn't have sent him to that spot, it would have completely changed the course of my life. Because meeting him and Funk, you know, Funk taught me how to put letters together properly. Yeah. Funk was the first MC I ever knew. You know, he was 1 year older than us, but he was leagues ahead. Like, you know, he was just fucking very active, very young.
He's in lovely dope stories, man. I'm just thinking, I don't know. Is this Funk that still paints now?
Yeah.
Oh, he's a fucking gentleman, man.
Yeah, and he's a styled dog.
Yeah,
Uncle
letters.
Funk, we call him.
Yeah,
he always used to say, when audio bullies blew up, he'd be like, I obey, he's like my little brother and that. He's like a little brother to me. But it's true, you know, he
went through that, didn't you?
He was, and I didn't have an older brother, and he was Plot's older brother, and we were like family, you know, and we started GFS with him.
So graffiti takes over, you and Plot are out there racking paint, running around the city again, seeing different parts of the place, and then you're finished.
Sorry, seeing England, man, because we went racking in some nuts gaffs, you know, miles out.
Jumping on the main line.
This is in the days when you could sit in the first class carriage just blazing zoots.
Yeah.
Show if the TI came, show him your bus pass.
Yeah, flash it.
Or maybe get dashed off the train. Yeah. That was it.
Find out where you were.
You were free out there.
I used to do Bedford and Luton and all that.
Yeah, we went all over, man. We'd meet at Junction in the morning and just fly out. Yeah. But Omen, so then Omen and Offa, they were two boys in the year above.
Okay.
And they, once we'd started GFS, we kind of started hanging with them. We got to know them. And then that became me, Plot, Funk sort of, you know, went off and did his thing with whoever else, and it was me, Plot, Offa, and Omen.
Okay,
we were like the core of GFS at the time.
So did
then you had Down and Kin, they joined, and they'd done their thing as well. Yeah. It's got to be said. And then Vega flew the flag later. Then Tense.
It went on and on.
Yeah.
But to go back,
to forget fucking Aiky. Fucking
hell, never.
Course. Yeah.
Plot turns up in your school
and
helps reignite this graffiti itch you've got.
We start out together. We're both essentially toys.
Had he painted before? Had he been in it? Or was it still...
His big brother was out doing it.
Yeah.
And we kind of... It was me, my boy Ampho, Cheek and Plot. And we went and stayed at Cheek's in Chiswick.
Yeah.
And we went out with little pens. This is one of the first missions. None of us wrote what we ended up writing.
Yeah.
Plot was writing. I wrote Trap. Plot. Maybe Plot did write Plot. Nah, he wrote Wreck.
Yeah.
And Cheek wrote something else. Andy wrote Os. But anyway, that was a real... So yeah, we went through the toy stage.
Yeah.
With loads of different toys that fell off. And a lot of the time, I think it was due to people's mums and dads clocking
yeah,
that they were up to no
slapping
good
wrists and no, confiscating
not hanging with them boys anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
And fucking, that's exactly what I'd do. But you know, we were off the radar, and I felt for them kids at times because you knew they'd been pulled out of the mission, and they'd see your reaches, and they'd be like, "Yeah, yeah, I saw your dub," and they'd kind of laugh, and you go, "Oh man, that got stopped for you." But if dad's at home, he's not having that shit. You know what I mean?
No, it's true.
Yeah.
So, well, in not every case, but in a lot of cases.
Well, I was saying that, Plot and Funk's old man was about, but he was just more lenient and was just like, look, if the boys have got to go out and do what they've got to
That's
do.
But fucking
hell, they sent them through some stress in the 90s, as I did my mum, you know what I mean?
So, you set up GFS?
Yeah, me and Funk started that, man, at my house. My mum was away.
And you're in secondary school halfway through or whatever?
This would have been 93.
Okay, yeah, so you're 93. Second year or third year.
My mum used to go away for long periods of time and leave me and my sister at the house. And it was like three house ones, and we had a party, and we'd drunk, and me and Funk are coming up with all these names and Plot. I don't know, I can't remember exactly who was there. Omen says he was there. He probably was.
Yeah.
But he'd say he was even if he wasn't. But fucking... we were saying like graffiti fanatics, gangsters from South, and all this stupid shit. And then I remember it. Me and Funk were like, "Yeah, we're starting a crew, Plot." And Plot was like, "Yeah, we always fucking say that." And it's like, "Yeah, but Plot, the last crew we started was called fucking First Class Bombers. That can't run." And then the one before that was We Three Kings, WTK, when we were the biggest toys in the whole city.
I loved early crew names were amazing.
Yeah, always joke. We still laugh about that.
Got to, man. They were great. Got to find that one, though.
Yeah.
So GFS starts and you lot, I mean, well, for one, it's still a crew and it's still going.
Yeah.
So like, you lot started off this thing.
Yeah.
And started pushing, hitting West London hard.
Yeah, and I believe it was influenced by DDS and PFB.
Yeah.
And if you look at the two letters, the end letter's got an S and the middle letter's got an F.
It was like probably like part of London law, though. You had to have an S at the end of your crew name.
It just looked nice. It looked nice. Exactly. We weren't even aware of it, but it also worked with the name and, you know.
Over in Kilburn, RLS, IMS.
They all ended with S's.
SBS. That was down south, obviously.
But mind you, SBS was the first.
SBS.
Was the first London crew.
SCS in West Hampstead as well.
Yeah. Yeah, we all sort of follow the ones we love, take a little anagram of it and mix it up. Yeah. Yeah. Like FLS.
FLS.
Like, sounded like GFS. And they were like GFS Youth. But then BSE, they were like a sort of neighbouring crew of ours that Vizzo introduced us to. He met them all at Richmond College.
So
fucking hell, we ain't even mentioned Bizzo, man.
Yeah, so you're about to get to that then.
He joined later.
Yeah, so GFS properly established themselves.
Yeah.
Over the early to mid 90s.
Yeah.
And then I remember coming down, I came down to Grundy. I can't remember who brought me there.
A historical place, man.
An amazing spot. And I think I went there twice, and it was summer in 96.
Yeah.
And you lot had owned it.
Yeah, it was 32, Coochie and Don and them boys that.
And there were some other fire pieces.
I remember that place when there was 32 dubs that were like the first dubs on the wall, you know what I mean? Coochie 32, massive writer from our ends. He went all city. He had a little spell with Rate, actually. Rate's got some funny stories about him. But again, he's passed away on it, so rest in peace, man.
Okay. So that's when I started seeing Vizzo GFS, I think, around 96.
Vizzo, sure
Did I see a massive blocky in a park down there?
Yeah, but basically Vizzo wrote Smuff. Vizzo lived up off the same bit as Omen, up near the roundabout, up between Mortlake and North Sheen.
Mm-hmm.
And Viz was like, I knew Viz at primary school. Moved to our primary school in the last year. He was in my sister's year.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like good friends, him and my sister. And I'll never forget the first day he came to school, and he just stood out, man. He was like running around the playground. Everyone wanted to be his pal. He was just one of them kids, man. He's had a real positive aura about him. And we lost touch. He was 2 years above me at school. He was more part of the skater kind of crowd. he had a band, he was on that kind of tip, and then suddenly, yeah, he just started graffing, and I was seeing Smuff Up, and the Bombs were kind of toy. I had no idea it was him. Then we started seeing Vizzo things, and it was like, shit, right, he's getting good now. Mm-hmm. And then he'd done a massive dub with Cheek under the bridge, and I remember me and Plot just went down there. We were under the bridge in Chiswick on that line that runs through Kew Bridge and Chiswick. And I'm looking at him doing this massive fucking Vizzo dub, massive. And I'm like, fuck, I'm kind of drunk. I'm like, Viz, that's sick, mate, come on. And I was like, oh, new recruit. And then my sister was up at his house, and me and Plot were at mine Friday night or whatever, all getting drunk and stoned and whatnot. And Viz is like, I want Plot and Obey to come up the house. Like, and me and Plot went to his house. He lived on that massive road and by the lines on right one. Yeah, where the track runs from Richmond to Kew.
Yep.
And, yeah, we just hit it off again. He was already like my brother from when we were little.
Yeah.
But we'd lost touch for 3-4 years.
Yeah.
And we just kind of became, it was like one of them bonding nights.
Yeah.
You know, them
amazing.
When we started doing missions, and there was a little period of time where we'd all be at Vizzo's house. Because, his mum went away a lot and just left him with the yard.
Mm.
Yeah.
West had a real, like, proper family unit in those years, didn't it, man?
Yeah.
I'm finding it weird. I'm not finding it weird. Because I'm exactly your age.
Yeah.
And for me, I mean, yeah, it was a bit of a mad crossover in Kilburn, but there weren't many writers. West Hampstead started popping off, I suppose, at those years.
Yeah, certain spots of London were dead. Fully dead.
Yeah. Literally dead. Yeah, like, Kilburn, there weren't many of us coming out then, man, because it was
Diet done some bits.
Yeah, but he was even the way before, because those middle years, the mid-90s towards the late 90s.
We didn't fuck with that line very much, to be honest. It was Scott Free and FLS started doing it more. I think the only time I ever even painted the London Overground, like a reach, obviously once you got down to Gunnersbury and Richmond, but I remember me and 8 going and doing Camden Road, but you know, we didn't get out as much as some people. We went all city doing yards.
Yeah.
And we did bits and bobs, but...
You were travelling, you were going to go and get something.
Like we'd hit yards on the all four corners and that. But I think now it's just fucking, you know, it's opened up and people really...
The city seems, I don't know if it's because we're adults now, but the city seems smaller. The wave of writers, you know, from Tox onwards.
Yeah, all well, that guy, people, that's just, I mean, that amazed me.
He set a standard, and not to say that anyone else has never set a standard.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there's all city kings.
No, but he was up on every tube
but
in
Tox
London.
Was another level.
And that was when we thought yards weren't doable.
Yeah.
I was amazed. And I didn't get on the
for
tube
10
at that
years.
Point. I stopped because I had a car and I was fucking just travelling around the world and shit, and I barely got on the tube. I got on the tube one day, went to Earl's Court, and I was like, this geezer's got a bum on every fucking
but
train.
But he set a precedent for what's happening now, because everyone who's going all city seems to have it locked in quite a certain amount of time.
Yeah. Force and Ofsky and them boys.
But Temperance's been through it.
Oh, Temperance. I know, I met him back in the days when Chrome and Black was near Brick Lane.
Yeah.
Nice geezer, man.
Yeah, nice geezer. But it's just... Yeah, the
king,
way...
absolute king.
Yeah.
Tall motherfucker as well.
Maybe it's because they're older. I don't know what it is. I just didn't have the urge. I couldn't go all city when I was 18. It wasn't happening.
You had local 19. Writers, semi-local writers, half... Yeah.
I was a manor painter, and that was it.
The guys that taught me were, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But we... In terms of that, I think we, if you, in the glory days, you know, it was like if you went up the district, that was locked. We locked that. The fucking line that went Waterloo from Richmond locked that. We locked all sorts of places. Viz locked a lot. I mean, Viz went all city bombing, would say. Viz, I did.
Yeah, Viz, I did.
And then you had Vega and Tents. It was like little different sections and times. And then we had a second wave in the sort of early noughties. It's Plot and Stay, you know, fuck. They went. Absolutely ham. They done nearly every yard in London. You know what I mean?
There can't have been many other. I mean, you bred RT. Like, RT comes from GFS.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, pretty much so. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, Will Vibes was in it. Vibes, Town, Basically, GF, I can't think of any other West London crews that have done, when you think about it now, really, the amount of time GFS has been going and to come strictly out of West London, you didn't like make a crew that branched throughout the whole city.
No, it was West London Southwestern
and Southwestern and West London writers. Yeah. And it's been going for 20 years, pretty much.
Yeah.
And it's still getting put up.
Yeah.
You go Halls of Fame and you'll see it, especially around West.
Yeah, you know, kids have been doing some trains and all that.
Exactly.
Well,
so I can't, and I'm thinking, you spawned RT and you must have spawned other, or inspired at least, other crews to start. And mate, I've never given GFS its props ever.
Yeah.
I'm not saying I haven't, but it's just quite weird. You summon it up now and I'm thinking, hang on, nothing else in crew size came out of West like that for a long time.
Yeah.
Obviously, Don and them lot did what they did before.
Yeah, and PFB.
Exactly, and PFB,
which
of
was
course,
a West crew, and then Rate was from South. If you think about PFB, everyone in PFB except for Drax and Robbo was West.
Yeah.
Psych,
Elk
mean,
was Northwest, but yeah, Psych, kind
well,
of,
yeah, still
but
West.
That was the tip. That was it.
Yeah. If you, it's interesting, man. I'd like to actually study it properly one day, like a geek, innit? And get graph it out, but there's definitely ways that these lines and parts of the city were marked out by certain parts of people.
That's what my map's about. That's what my map's about. I didn't get it perfectly right. It's my vision of it, but that was what I was seeing. It was just like these people in these areas.
Mean. I remember Mean. You know, props to Mean. I know him. He's a sound dude, and fucking hell, he had every outside. I remember a time Mean had, and this is when the district
the
nine used to stay in, or maybe the, God knows what.
Yeah.
But Mean had every outside, Kane line as well. Kane line had every inside.
Coming in from east.
On the district line, yeah. And I heard he lived up in Upminster, but yeah, was up on every train.
Yeah.
Him and Mean, they ran that line at one point.
Amazing.
Mate,
times,
the stories are unstoppable, isn't it?
Yeah, mate, it could just go on.
It goes on.
Chapter 2, Culture. Simon jumped into culture at a young age, and getting his tag, seeing Don Peters, Grace and the Lions, and forming good relationships with his GFS family, graffiti became his life. We chat about him also going raving in his early teens and getting into music. He talks about his love for skating and how styles change in cultures and the effect that has, and also about his dad stepping in and getting him hooked up with a drummer. We then move on to his relationship forming with Tom Dinsdale, who would later become his producing partner in Audio Bullies, and how believing in himself to make music led to Larry Lamb getting into the mix.
So look, let's talk about the people you met whilst you were doing all of that. So you're running around the graffiti scene, you're in there for, so we'll talk mid-90s to the 2000s.
Yeah.
You start meeting people, you get involved with other things, you start raving.
Yeah, yeah.
Clubbing.
Yeah.
You're getting all, into all of that.
Yeah.
And then what happens through that world?
Well, yeah, I mean, in the graph, when we were kind of, 93, 94, it was 92, you know, we were into like the hardcore and jungle kind of scene.
Yeah.
And it was all like LTJ Bookham and fucking Cool FM and all of that sort of music. And then it must have been about 94, 95, the house thing started coming in. And, you know, it was kind of... So many tunes, I cut my head goes.
When did you first go clubbing? Do you remember?
We used to go to this underage rave.
Oh, wicked.
Out in Tolworth.
Yeah.
And then they moved it to Epsom. It was called Teen Rage.
See, from what years? 92?
That was 92, 93. Maybe 94.
Yeah. I know, obviously, it wasn't adult raving.
But it was a proper rave.
It was a proper
and
rave.
And it had proper names of MCs and DJs. And it was hardcore and jungle music.
Wicked.
And it was at its peak before the scene kind of split. So the Tollworth ones were the best.
Right.
Certain people remember these. Certain pals of mine used to play at them. And I think Funk used to MC at them, to be fair. There was a golden period where the raves were packed. And then they did a survey. The people that put the rave on did a survey. I remember my mate telling me, and they were going around asking, what do you want? Happy hardcore or jungle, because the scene was splitting and it went two ways.
Yeah, I was in Labyrinth in East London.
Yeah,
downstairs was happy hardcore, upstairs was drum and bass and jungle.
Yeah, and I think
in the split, and I remember it changing,
it always happens.
Hit hardcore went into the back room,
and
jungle took over, drum and bass took over the ground floor.
Yeah,
so that's what you're saying.
Drum and bass did take over.
Yeah,
happy hardcore got kind of pushed out to fucking the sub, like, you know, Kent and Mad, like yeah. just a different, it carried on, but it went round the country sort of thing. And then Jungle just went mad.
And they stopped
playing it. And years yeah. later, we went Brighton and I saw all fucking Kenny Ken. I thought they'd disappeared, and there they are playing to all these students in yeah. Brighton. And it was like, all right, well,
they're doing loads
they took
students.
It out there. They blew yeah. it up in London and, yeah. and off they went. That was that. Then it was house. And then pretty soon it was house and garage, and the garage thing just kind of, but there was a, you know, it was again a time when.
And those, did you decide then that you were like, this is another part of London life that I'm loving, this music, this clubbing.
Yeah,
like, this is me basically.
Fully, yeah. Yeah. Well, it's that thing when everyone's into it and you're all going to go out and party.
And so that was the same lot. That's GFS and all your boys and it was a few all, other yeah. people that didn't write, but
yeah,
generally...
and Tom, you know, Tom from the Audio Bullies, he was DJing at certain parties we were going to. People were putting on raves that we knew and stuff. Yeah, it was always me and Plot and Vega and Bizzo. And there's one party and they done in a snooker club. It was like me, Vizzo, Pause. That's another guy that was in GFS yeah. that passed away.
Fucking hell, man.
Everybody was at that party, yeah. Good times. But yeah, we've always... Yeah, I mean, fucking hell. Yeah, we've done a lot of that.
So, through going clubbing and that, with all your mates,
yeah.
you then meet Tom.
Yeah, Tom I knew from Grey Court School.
Oh, so he was at school
Tom
as well?
Tom was a couple of years, he was in my sister's year, 2 years above me at school. Right, cool. He was pals with Vizzo and all of them as well.
But he didn't write?
No, he didn't graph. No. He's got into art recently.
Yeah.
He started, so, I took him out on a mission, in fact, me, him and my pal Homie.
Yeah.
We went because T lives over in Hackney and he started, you know, he got into painting in the house and I was like, you should come on a mission. We just took him on the canal. He was a little bit like, it was his first mission. World. Yeah, he was just had those nerves, but it was nice to see.
Yeah.
And he's got this little character that he does, and he's been out, he's actually been out there over East.
Yeah,
started getting in a few wars.
Yeah. Amazing.
Someone took him out and he kept going back.
Entertain that shit, man.
Yeah.
Fuck. But back then, so you didn't meet him through graffiti. What was the connection with him?
I knew him through school.
And then music was...
And then he was DJing. He always had a set of decks. And it's like memories. Like I knew him, but we didn't like shout each other and shit. And it was Vizzo. I remember Vizzo knocked at my house and he was with Tom in the car. And he knocked round mine to get a draw. And he's like, yo, you come in swimming. Because Tom's mum and dad had a swimming pool in the back garden. They obviously wanted a draw. Viz is like, yeah, come. And I'm like, and we started going to Tom's and chilling at the pool and sitting outside and smoking zoots and stuff. But Tom, yeah, it was always about, you know, we were from the same neck of the woods. He was from Kingston, I was from Richmond. We knew the same people. There was a party, Milk and Two Sugars, that these people we knew used to put on. Tom used to DJ there.
I remember that name.
Yeah. Yeah. I used to go out with a girl that was the promoter's sister. So we were all up there. And that was when fucking music like Armin van Helden, Masters at Work, Sugar Daddy, fucking all that kind of shit. You know, it was like that. Loads of US music, and then people were starting to make the UK version, which was yeah. like the beginnings of garage and all that. So that, yeah, we were always in King's Cross.
So good years, man. Never fucking made them late 90s,
formative
man.
Years, you know, fucking... we'd have never made Shut You Down without Sugar Daddy, because it was those breakdowns to drops. No one was doing that at that time.
Let's go into what happened next with you and Tom. So, were you interested in music, in making music at all before?
I've always... My dad fucking used to sit about the living room playing the guitar. My mum used to, you know, there was always music.
So, making music was something you seen and you were like, yeah, I understand.
I think that played a big attainable. Part. It's I attainable. Think it played a big part because yeah. I'd seen him sit and strum his guitar and I'd do the guitar with him and he got me a drum when yeah. I was little. So I wasn't scared of it.
It's an attainable skill.
Yeah, you know, it's
yeah.
like if you show someone something because a baby,
yeah. Yeah.
It will spark that thing off where they're never going to really like feel a barrier with it.
So,
but I hadn't, yeah, for many years when I was graphing, I wasn't aware like that.
No, you weren't to the banging music. On an MPC or
no, I was
DJing
it,
or
it was. Yeah, it was kind of like I was getting, you know, it's weird, you know, you'd listen to all these tunes, you didn't even think about who'd made them. It's like I wasn't even aware that I'd made, that like people made them, if you know what I mean. Remember this geezer used to write Scope. He was at Grey Court with us, Jimmy. And he's like, yeah, do you know how people make these tunes? Like, they put all these beats in a box and the box just juggles them round. And I just remember thinking, you know, I was probably like 13, like, the fuck? What? So basically some mad box just makes all these beats we're listening to. And I just wasn't aware of it until I went for a fucking drum lesson, man.
Yeah.
Because my dad, I remember my dad's like, look, man, you're just, all you're doing is graph. You've got to, you know, focus on something. It's not going to make you any money.
Yeah.
And he was right. You know, I wasn't going to be fucking Banksy.
You weren't going to be that right.
I wasn't going to be that one that thought about it differently and made a load of pee out of it.
It was like, what it was for you.
It was right. It was, we weren't trying to make any
money. No. It was GFS. It was the crew. Yeah. It was the family. Yeah.
Yeah. And he's like, listen, you know, we'd go on holiday once a year and he'd, it's obviously, he's like, I'm going to take, you know, we're going for a walk and we're going to have that chat, father-son chat. And he's like, you've got to do something, man, you know. So he sent me for a drum lesson because he knew I love music anyway. And the guy's like, yeah, look, I've got this Cubase. And he just, I'm like, what? You mean, he's like, yeah, you mate, this is where people make tunes on, you know. And I'm like, what? You mean tunes like house or
that's the box
jungle? Yeah,
that's fucking the box.
Yeah, yeah.
And is that box? Yeah.
And before you know it, we'd made a tune. He's like, look, I can teach you how to engineer it if you want, or you can just play on the keyboard. I was like, yeah, let me just play on the keyboard. And before you know it, I had like an all right sounding little housey track. You know, that must have been like 96, 97.
Fucking hell, yeah.
Mm, yeah. And I didn't tell my pals I'd gone for a drum lesson. I was embarrassed.
Yeah, of course
you were.
It was
like something I kept secret.
Well, because it didn't, you're 16, feel... 17. You're like, I can't tell them my dad's got some fucking class set up for me. Yeah. I can't do that.
Nah,
I know exactly
what
you're saying.
It didn't feel cool at the time.
No, of course not.
But little did I know, it was like the coolest shit ever.
Fucking coolest shit ever. Yeah, literally, you saying, my dad, you know, da 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 da. I'm literally thinking, oh, God, yeah.
Nice, no, a blessing, man.
This summer's the one.
Little,
I've done it a couple of times with my boy, but I think I've got to do another one this summer. Is that?
Well, this is it, man. A little helping hand, isn't it, man?
Yeah, just that little bit of guidance in one direction.
That's what we all need.
So, from that, you start to, that forms a habit. Do you keep going to the drum classes? Do you keep disappearing that evening and not being about out with your mates? Does that still continue? Or?
It's just once a week.
It was once a week.
I remember I used to call my missus from the phone box. It was in Sheen. He used to go in Sheen. He used to call my missus from the phone box.
Yes, phone boxes.
And, and pretend like that I had that. Pretend I'd been. She'd be like, "Where you been?" I'd be like, "Ah, oh, just with my mate, man." Like,
yeah.
And then she found out. She's like, "Why'd you keep this secret? Like, it's good." And I'm like, "Oh, I'm embarrassed."
Spoke, isn't it?
Yeah. Mad, isn't it? But that's
the way it is at those ages,
youth,
mate.
Yeah.
Of course it is.
Yeah.
Nothing silly about it whatsoever. It's how you have to deal with things back then.
Yeah.
So. You keep going, you learn more.
I keep doing it. There's a kid down at the bottom of the estate, Jess Jackson. He fucking ended up going on to work with Tiger and all them people. He lives in LA now. And he was the first guy that showed me the internet. He's like, look, I'm chatting to someone in America. I'm like, you're mad, what are you doing? I'm like, little did I know.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, Jess was a good boy, man. He had a little studio in his room. And he put out some garage tunes that had done well. And I went down there, made a few tracks with him. We did some White Labels. Done a Busta Rhymes White Label. Did a Q-Tip White Label. Garage two-step tunes.
Amazing.
They're on some of the old Exposure tapes. EZ and that were playing them.
Wicked.
And then Jess went missing on me. And George Lamb, who went, you know, George Lamb ended up being a TV presenter.
Yeah.
I met him at Richmond College. And
his dad's the actor, isn't it?
Yeah, Larry Lamb.
Yeah.
George bought me my first little studio.
Yeah.
All from a conversation we had in college,
And he was just like, this needs to set up.
I dropped out of A-levels and I've gone back to fucking do a B-tech in music. And he's like, what are you going to do? I said, I'm going to make some tunes. He's like, oh, what, you think you can do it? I said, like, I know I can do it. He goes, what, some house? I goes, yeah, definitely, it's easy. It's just a couple of notes, which it is, but it's the magic.
You've got to make the sound.
But yeah, he was the first person to believe in me in that way. Like, obviously, mum and dad were always... going to be mum and dad trying to drive you in a good way, but he was the first person I said it to that went
yeah.
He goes, I'll do it with you, and he was like going to get in the studio with us, and he just realised he didn't have the patience or desire to make music. So I was like, look, we just need some equipment, and forgot about it. And then one Sunday the dawn goes and it's George, and he's there with his little car with boxes and boxes, Akai's and the whole lot. And it sat there doing nothing for ages. because I just weren't technically minded.
Yeah.
We got Jess involved, made some tunes. Jess goes missing. George has pulled in a lot.
So Jess comes in, sets up with you.
Sets
gets
up.
Gets it all going for you, yeah. Teaches you what's what.
Yeah, and then I do a few more lessons with this geezer just so I can learn to
And is this still
myself.
You by yourself?
Just before Tom, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
Me and Tom might have jumped in someone else's studio a couple of times.
But
Tom,
it was nothing, yeah.
It was a little bit, but basically Jess went missing. George got us a Luck and Neat remix.
Wicked.
Which needed to be in a few days. 500 quid. Wanted to get it done. Jess wouldn't pick up the phone. I think he might have been pissed off because I'd done a show on Flex and I took my other pal to DJ and not him. Might have pissed him off. Looking back, I should have taken him really because he was producing the tunes that I was playing. Anyway, I think it probably weren't that. That might have played a part in it, but maybe just couldn't be fucked that day or he was with a girl or whatever.
Yeah,
couldn't get hold of him. Yeah, life. He was gone. So Tuss, I thought, that's not happening. Tom's gone, I'll have a go with you. And he just bought a new MPC. We do a whole day and it's going nowhere. We're like, no one's really controlling it. He's made this beat that ain't really, like, doesn't fit two-step because Tom was coming more from house at the time. It just didn't fucking work. The tune weren't working. I thought, fuck it, it's not happening. I'm not going to get this remix done. Whatever, it's gone. The next day, 9 a.m, Tom's knocked at my door. I'm like, oh, it's fucking you again. Oh, and then he's like, let's do the mix. I'm like, oh, it's not going to work, man. Like, and he's gone, nah, come on, let's give it another go. And I'm like, all right, listen, just let me make the beat and you mix it and get all the sounds right. You get them up on the drum machine. Let me make the beat. Let me play the bass line. And you tune it as a DJ and put the effects on like you would as a DJ. Let me sort of control that part and you control that part. And he went, yeah, cool, man. No, which was clear. He was like, look, I'm ready to fucking...
Let's go.
Let's do it.
We've picked roles. We've got them.
Yeah. And we did it. And a week later, we were listening to Kiss out of Tom's car, sitting on Richmond Hill and listening to our bass line banging out. Up a neat remix. Yeah.
On proper radio as well.
Yeah, Kiss FM, man. And you can never beat that buzz, hearing that sound come out, man. It's just like seeing your graph, you know.
Chapter 3, Creativity. Things really start to fall into place, but music doesn't seem to take over everything in Simon's life just yet. And when one of his best friends die, he tells us about how the following weeks affected him and his friends and what led him back to the studio and forming Audio Bullies. We go on to talk about experiences in the music industry, making tracks, managers, record labels, and how Ibiza life can take its toll. And then we get on to talking about what's coming next.
That's fucking amazing, man. Yeah. In that era.
Yeah.
To have that happen because it was radio waves, tapes,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, we were listening to our tunes on tapes
and the clubs, and that was it,
yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Yeah, they weren't doing CDs of that music in the 90s, late 90s.
No, it was tape packs,
it was all tape packs,
yeah,
tapes and tape packs. And then you'd tune into your pirate stations, you'd go to Kiss for something a bit more, well, because they just turned.
Yeah, Kiss was big for us when we were little.
Mate, that's what we listened move, to.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah.
And so, has he stayed, George?
Yeah.
Did he stay with you?
George
he got you the hookup for the remix, right?
George got the hookup for the remix.
Yeah.
Fucking Vizzo died.
Yeah.
Me and Tom had just done that remix, didn't do anything. Vizzo died. It's just fucking sent our world mad. And when the Audio Bullies began, when that happened. No, because we partied for like fucking a week or two with everyone, BSE and GFS and all that.
Celebrating his life.
Yeah, just went mad. That was our reaction. Just pulled all night as ended up, it was peak summer. So we were all outdoors for like fucking a week or so solid. That all stopped. Everyone went home. We're all fucking on a come down, feeling sad. And I'm like, I've got my little studio set up. I'm going to fuck about with it. And I remember ringing Tom and saying, yeah, like, you know what, man? This is making me feel better to make some music. Why don't you come round? And he did. Before you know it, we'd made We Don't Care.
Shut up.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But it was the reaction to, you know, it was that thing, you know, it was that spark of tragedy like that and realising just fucking how short and precious it is, and you go like, no, fuck it, I'm going to go for it now. You know, where whatever fears I had before have kind of vanished. It's like...
Mate, oh, give me goosebumps, but right. It's amazing that your mind was open enough to take that in and think, you know what?
Yeah.
I've got to use this.
Yeah. And do it for him.
Yeah.
And, you know, and his, I know it gave his mum strength and all of us, you know.
You know, I was different because you're a teenager and for whatever reason your kit sat on the corner, but I bought all this kit and got Audacity on my computer 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And then I sat there, done a couple of interviews and then was just anxious and I'm too busy to give myself the time to have these conversations that I really want to have with people.
Yeah.
And then fucking Jan Asset died.
Yeah.
And I was like, I've got no more excuses, man.
Yeah.
I can't just sit. I can't not have these conversations now. Why? Yeah. Why would I stop?
You get it now, man.
You've got to, man.
Yeah, but you're making me think of something because Robbo rang me, right? And I'd never met him, but he was a real, one of the biggest influences on me because he had an O and a B.
Yeah.
So I used to properly kind of work with his letters. Yeah, yeah. Take influence from his stuff, and he rang me when he was making that documentary. He's like, look, I want to use some of your music. I'm like, yeah, cool, great. And he kept saying, why don't you come and meet me and the guy from the BBC? And I think he blew out and then I blew out, and then me and Plot went and watched Don put on a thing where he got Duster over,
yeah,
and we went down to the Westbourne Studios and watched it. They played fucking, might have been Style Wars or some video. But Robbo was there. And I didn't know it was him. I'd never seen him before. Massive. And
fucking
there's
giant.
There's this dude telling like jail stories outside. And thinking, who's this geezer? In a mad way, he reminded me of Stay.
Yeah?
He just had that, you know, that energy. Mad, that graph energy, that, you know, like, just Stay's a sick storyteller.
I've never met him.
Sort of, I mean, I don't know if Robbo's from an Irish background, but Stay is, but he has just got that... I think he might be, man, yeah. But that... sort of Irish vibe storytelling, do you know what I mean? And but anyway, I was in a really fucking bad mood. I'm like, who's that geezer? Plot's like, it's Robbo. And he was on a good buzz, and I was just, some shit was going on with the missus, and I just didn't even feel like being out. I thought, oh, fuck it, I should go and say hello, really, but I thought, I'm not in the mood, I'll see him next time. You know, and he's a hero of mine. And I just, me being a moody fucker. And so I missed that opportunity. I never got to just shake the geezer's hand. And then the next thing, that shit went down. Him ending up in the, you know.
Mate, I was printing the prints up there, the Rest in Peace Banksy print for him, the Top Cat one.
Yeah.
And I called him on the Saturday morning. No answer. I leave a voicemail. Like, John, call me, it does. Need to talk about printing. And then 2 hours later, no callback, an unidentified number calls my phone. I'm in the print studio printing up in Dalston. And then the police, the person goes, oh yeah, do you know John? I was like, what? No, I don't. And he goes, yeah, you do. He just left a voicemail on his phone. Like, oh yeah, sorry, yeah, I'm his printer. Da-da-da. He goes, okay, last night he's falling down some stairs, he's unconscious right now, we need to know his last movements. I'm like, what?
Terrible, man. But there, these
shock things. Rizzo the same. Jan the same.
Yeah, no one's invincible, man.
Yeah, it's though, because we don't think of death in that sense, and I think that's why. But we see death, and especially in our teen years, we probably wonder. It's old people.
Yeah,
such a couple of my mates died in the '90s. Didn't hit me as much. A couple of them did, but not the wave of what I've had in recent years since other friends gone has been nuts. You become aware.
Yeah. No, you do, man. But no, it was the. The moral of that story, man, is just like, you know, do meet your heroes, man. Do you know what I mean? And don't care if they ain't what you thought they'd be. Still
go and shake that hand.
But yeah, if you want to, if you love someone in that way, and you know, obviously, if someone ain't in the mood, leave them alone. But I think Robbo was in the mood. It was me that weren't in the mood, but not a regret. Just like, yeah, if I could go back, if I had a little time machine, I'd have gone and chatted to him. Do you know what I mean? But I did. I'm just blessed. I got the pleasure of speaking to him on the phone.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Real fucking good of him to reach out like that and call.
Yeah, done, man.
So that track gets made, and what were your decisions then? You were like, right, fuck it, we're gonna.
Well, it was like we were going nuts in my bedroom. You know,
you knew you'd made something.
Yeah, it was. You could feel it. It was like it was igniting something in us. we were taking it to our pals. They were going, what have you made? That is mad. What have you made? Like, nothing sounded like that at that time. And I went to Ibiza. George was working there, driving people. Like, I'm like, I need a little fucking holiday. I'm still sore over Vizzo. Took that CD out with me. Go and stay at his. He's got a little gaff. He's driving people for Ministry of Sound. And, we're like, I remember getting in the car. I said, I think we made something sick, man. You should listen to it. And he's like, yeah, I like it. And it's getting played to this geezer, Jazzy M. He don't DJ anymore, but he was like a big Ministry of Sound DJ at the time. He was kind of on his way out. Had a severe bugle habit, do you know what I mean?
Right.
My first sort of look at that world.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the people rising and the people falling, all that shit. But bless him, lovely geezer, man. He discovered Orbital, is what he says.
Okay.
And he never signed them. So he was getting this weird, like, flashback of that. I remember sitting chatting with him on the Pasha roof. And he was going, listen, I know when I've heard something special and that special is going to blow. Bloody blah. We get back. George sends out the fucking CD to loads of people. By this point, we've got like two or three. I think we had Face in the Cloud as well. We made it.
Wicked. End.
But then fucking nothing. Don't hear anything. And I'm like, fuck, I've got to go and get a job. You know, I'd left college. Selling weed was getting tiring. And it just felt like it weren't leading anywhere for me. And it was like, all right, I need a job. So I went and got a job at Pi in Ealing.
So what was that, the end of that, like towards the end of that year?
2001 it would have been, just after Vizzo died.
Yeah.
Went for that holiday, came back, got a job in the shop and thinking, oh fuck, we thought we were onto something. No one else seems to. Because, you know, this weren't internet period you just post it to everyone.
No.
This was, we need a deal. Who's going to get it out for us?
Yeah.
And then I'm like working in this like shop pie in Ealing. Used to sell like, you know, Armani and Stoney and all that part time. Just fucking getting on with it. And then the phone calls start coming in, like some, you know, someone from a publishing place rings George back and goes, look, I'd be very surprised if people ain't interested in this stuff. And yeah, then it just, you know what it's like, the word just goes, and then we had like a few deals on the table.
Within no time.
Yeah, yeah, it happened quickly.
So what, by 2002? Because what, album dropped in 03?
Signed in 02.
Yeah.
Album dropped 03. Yeah.
What a fucking year, man.
Yeah. But it's mad, you know, a lot of it was made in 01. And it's just, even that process, still 2 years on, a long time.
I wonder if that happens much anymore. Whether that, you know, you make a great piece. I suppose it does, because not everyone just gets exposed that quickly. But imagine you had SoundCloud.
Yeah, I think most people, if you've got a sick one, they're banging it up as quick as they can now.
Yeah, exactly.
The access is so much
quicker. Whereas you made that music based off a feeling and, you know, everything you'd been through, the raving and the graffiti and the lifestyle and all that type of shit. Yeah. Made this sound completely fresh and new for London.
Yeah.
And it took you 2 years to get the world to hear it.
Yeah.
But fuck me. When that album dropped, man. When them singles started coming out.
Yeah.
What a fucking time.
Yeah, man.
And I remember the first time I saw you lot on TV, and it was a late night Channel 4 programme.
It was a Sarah Cox show. It was our first ever TV.
It might have been that. And when the backdrop Plot and Vega
were ballied up. Were they ballied up? Oh, piecing in it.
Yeah, in the background.
Yeah, and mate. Bez was on that. Bez like fucking was on the stage with us from Happy Mondays.
That was
our first TV performance.
I saw that.
Yeah.
And that, literally, I was just like, these are the fucking lads. These are the guys. This is amazing. Because I love hip hop. I'm through hip hop. I went through when I got into Pills and all that. That's when I was raving in the mid to late 90s. Yeah. I was predominantly into...
That's where it was at in the
garage.
UK.
Yeah, exactly.
You had American hip hop to listen to in the car, but...
Exactly, and at home. But I was raving every weekend.
Yeah, it was our thing, wasn't it, man? Music. You know, it was,
And so when that... And I'd moved to Brighton, completely out of that music now.
Yeah.
Only into hip hop. I'd opened my shop in 03, actually.
Yeah.
And your album dropped, and I was like, oh shit, it's London! Like, we're here! It was fucking brilliant, man.
Yeah, man. I love that. Sick, man. Sick.
And so what a fucking journey from there. Like, you just, you know, you carried on, you're pushing that music, and...
Ego War went mad for a minute, and then the storm kind of just suddenly stops. You're like, you know, fuck, it's gone quiet.
Mm.
And then fucking we're working on the second album in Grove, in them that building Canelot.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like, you know, sort of more comfortable all of a sudden, and just, yeah, it all went mad quiet for a minute, man. And then we made an album, which, you know, if we hadn't have suddenly made Shot You Down, that album wouldn't have, it would have, you know, there was a lot of, it's a great album, Generation. I'm very proud of it. But the press had decided, like, they were like, yeah, we're not, you know, because they boosted us real hard for whatever reason. You know, maybe one person that they rated went, nah, I'm not on it. And when they decide it's time, but then Shot You Down last minute. And I tell you the madness, man.
That mate, oh, mate,
I
that
love effect. Philippe Asculet, right? French geezer.
Okay.
That's who signed us to Virgin.
All right.
It was his idea to use that photo from Front magazine on the Ego War album. Okay. I rate him for that. He'd done some great bits. It turned in, you know, we were kids and it was intense. And
he was good.
There was disagreements, but bless him for that. Bless him for signing us. Don, I'd like to see him again. Ain't seen him in a good 10 years.
Right.
Maybe more, 15.
Yeah.
But we were going through, the press had decided house music was dead,
right.
In whatever format it had been in, you know. And this is when these people held so much more power than what they, you know. Now the people can all speak for themselves online, which is beautiful. It is a revolution, like people have been saying. In them days, you couldn't. And the labels were influenced by these magazines. You got the magazines saying house music's dead. Me and Top, it weren't dead. London Town was jumping about to it, but maybe the people that were writing these articles weren't. Now,
it's mad how powerful it was back then.
Yeah, but the people still controlled it, because so we're fucking taking him these bangers in, and he's going, hey, this is house music. I can't do nothing with this. Yeah? Now, bless James Pitt, who took our first CD to Virgin, because George or someone played him Shot You Down. And he was just like, wait, listen, that's got to go out now.
That's
got to go out now. And fucking thank God he did, because Murillo, who we were DJing with at the fucking time, tried and saw us play at a Pasha and saw it blowing. And I was so nutted, I didn't even notice. Tom was going, did you see what that tune did last night? So I was like, no. Jaw swinging. But fucking, he said girls were coming up to the decks. Who made this tune? Bloody blah. Murillo, the little who was meant to be our pal in the game, I'm sure he, you know, whatever. No, it's a sample. That's the nature of samples. Yeah. But he tried to bang out a version, and it came 1 week after our one.
Ooh.
I don't think anything could have stood in the way of our one, though, because the power existed, the passion existed.
Mate,
but it might have fucked with it a bit, you know.
Yeah, but that track. I didn't know that. I didn't know that background story when that track hit, man.
Yeah.
That was fucking absolutely gorgeous. Was it the same formula? Were you making the core beat and then Tom tweaked it? Did that stay that way?
Do you know, I'll tell you, an interesting thing went down when we made that, which is that I thought we're doing a mix here, and I remembered that Luck and Neat mix, and I kind of did my little prep talk at the beginning where I was like, look, let's simplify the beats. Because at the time, we'd been doing quite skippy beats, and that wasn't popular. I'd been in the club a lot, and I was noticing all the beats were just very simple.
Yeah.
I said, let's just take some fat beats from another record that's killing it in the club at the moment. Really simple, and just get one of them bouncy fucking clubhouse organ sounds. We had the Korg Micro at the time. Yeah, I played the bass line, and Tom, the minute I played it, Tom went, you know, I was about to play a different one.
Right.
And this is the thing about partnerships and groups and how you push each other along. I jammed this dun dun dun, and Tom, straight away, Tom goes, that's sweet. And I was literally, I wouldn't have locked it.
No.
You know, it's that thing.
You're ready to go next.
Yeah, hearing each other and helping each other.
And then the touring starts and you're in the clubs and you play Ibiza, obviously.
Done a lot out there, yeah.
Done a lot out there. Yeah. Season after season.
We smashed it for like 3 or 4 years. We were there every year, maybe 5.
Fucking
hell. We were like, we're going to die.
Can't go back.
And we refused gigs there, man. And then a couple of years later, we told some management or agent that we didn't play there anymore. Just not probably like on a big come down. Nah, we're never playing there. You know, we were just kids, man. We was, you know, we weren't really thinking about, like, that was part of our economy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it was like holiday suntan every 3-4 times a summer.
But it weren't good for the health.
We were just going mad and we didn't know how to rein it in. Yeah. So, but it might have been the smartest decision we ever made. You know what I mean? But we were going on like, few day benders and just ended up in a wild mess.
You did the London clubs and all of that. And
done a lot of Fabric.
Yeah.
That was our sort of, venue. The Cross a fair bit. And then, loads of festivals and fucking...
You were a musician.
Yeah, we were rolling.
You were an artist.
We were in, doing it, man. Yeah, we
and that's what you've stuck with.
Yeah, all the way, man. All the way. Yeah.
And whatever avenues that will lead down as well, I suppose.
You never know what you're going to do next, innit? But at the moment, we're sort of focusing on some new bits. We've made a few little tracks and they're sounding good, man. I think we're getting an album done. It's just getting Tom to commit, but I'd say we might have a third of an album done. But then again, I was just thinking on my way up here that we should just drop a single. It's what everyone does now, isn't it?
I'm
still stuck on this, like, let's spend 3 years making an album. It's like, I can't wait that long. We've got a couple of decent
bits.
Well,
you can still keep doing that.
Yeah, I'm just might sneak a few bits and bobs out, innit? I think it's time. Probably about 3 or 4 tracks that me and Tom have done that are pretty good.
Yeah. You could wrap them up.
But then again, I'm still like, I don't know, there's almost that part of me that does just want to hold back a bit because I feel like if we really go in,
it's about putting that right story together.
Yeah.
And if the single drops, if you're in that story, cool. But I think you're right. Maybe hang on one sec. Think about it. How you want to play it.
Yeah.
What is the story that you're going to get from this?
That record, because when we dropped Ego War, fair enough, we don't care in that. It came really quickly and early, but then you've got tunes like Turned Away and Snake.
Yeah.
You can hear Snake. Track one, isn't it? Yeah. You can hear us getting better by that point. Yeah. You can hear the combination of us two as producers and songwriters becoming more advanced than what it is in the early tunes like Facing the Cloud and We Don't Care.
Oh, mate, those albums.
Yeah.
Really make me think, man. And I think it must do that for a lot of fucking people, and it's a lot of people we know.
Yeah, I think it's time to tell the story, Daz, isn't it?
I think that's it.
That's what Omen said to me. Who's a fucking sick art dealer now. Yeah. He smashed it. Selling Rembrandts and shit.
Is he? Well, he fucking knows that.
And he goes, listen, Si, look. He goes, just remember this, man. He goes, no one's going to tell your story if you don't.
No, and that's the fucking... That is the point, man. It's not that I... this conversation has just enlightened it even more. I've always loved the Audio Bullies, and I didn't know you when I was a fan of you.
Sweet, yeah.
I only met you, as we say, in Shoreditch painting.
It was like a shop or something, wasn't it?
When I had the gallery there. Yeah. That's right. We were painting, and we hung out, we went drinking and that. But I've been a fan.
Yeah.
And stepping back and then hearing this story, and then I was like, I'm doing this podcast, I'm going to see if Simon's up for it, because I know he's got a sick story.
Yeah.
Summing it up now, I'm just like, fuck, man. Like the memories, the things I'm thinking of, and like it's just like that is really fucking important.
Yeah.
It's really important. And it must be for a lot of fucking people.
Yeah. I think that's what it came out of, is that we were like bored of the music we were listening to. I think that's what all these great artists come out of, is they're like, I'm going to make something for myself that blows my mind.
But it was so different as well, though.
It was a Graph record. No one had ever written a Graph record. Well, maybe Goldie, but it summed up Painting Tubes and Painting London Town, isn't it? Which is different.
But the thing is, it worked in a pop vibe. It worked. Yeah. And when I say pop, I mean to the masses.
Yeah.
You don't have to be a writer to listen to that song and love it.
Yeah.
There's many songs we've loved in our lives that have got nothing to do with what we think they're about.
Well, I met Panic, right? And you know, him and Intro a couple of years back. A while back, anyway. Yeah. And they're going, we used to bang your album when we went out painting. We Don't Care. That's about Graph, isn't it? And I'm like, you know what? It was actually written about a werewolf. But it carried the spirit of Graph. Because Tom sampled Teen Wolf. So the first lyrics, all the go out late at night, that was based on this werewolf thing. It didn't even matter, did it? It didn't even matter. But the rest of them were about Graph.
God, if you haven't heard these fucking albums, man. God, these tracks are so good. Mate, historical stuff, and I'm looking forward to what happens next. I'm looking forward to seeing how you can, and if I can help in any way, let me know.
Yeah, well, you'll be there with us, man.
The story up. It's not about wrapping the story up. It's just about...
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, we're playing We're playing Boomtown.
Oh, wicked.
We're
going
to do an Ego War DJ set there.
Sick.
That's what they want, apparently.
Lovely.
And we're going to do Boardmasters.
Nice.
And we're doing something in Holland as well. I mean, you're welcome to come to any of them.
Fucking hell, man.
Yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I'll put you on the list for whatever you, if you want to be there, man. Yeah. I'm trying to get a lot of heads out for it. I reckon it'll be like that. It'll be like, you know, because it's like, it's fresh again. And
yeah.
Everyone will come out, man.
Mate, this might be the summer, isn't it?
This summer, I think this summer's going to be like a little, there's going to be flashes of it. And then I think the following summer, it's going to be in full swing.
Yeah.
Unless I get hit by a bus.
Shit, man. Well, listen, thanks for coming over, brother.
Daz, always, man. Really always a pleasure. It, no, man. Great to so see you to again, up, man. It's been years, man. You know what I mean?
Ages.
Positive vibes.
Definitely, man.
Yeah.
Wicked, brother.
Wicked, brother.
Thank you.
Peace.
Audio Bullies, I'm a fan, you could probably tell. Their music's been a proper sound of mine and many people's London, and it was great going back and listening to Snake and We Don't Care, Shot You Down, all those classics. Go and check them out. I'm really looking forward to what's coming next. Simon's story is great, and I love how culture helped him mould his love for music to stay with him for life. One last thing before we leave. We mentioned a few people's names in that conversation. Pause, Vizzo, Robbo, Asset, all members of our graffiti culture, and all sadly passed away. They'll never be forgotten. They were all big movers and shakers in the scene in their own way. Rest in peace, boys. It will never be forgotten. Hope everyone enjoyed it. Love your city. Love your culture. Until next time. This is F24.